Well, good morning. Welcome back to the Church's Messy Podcast. Pastor Rick, it's great to have you back after some time off last week.
That's right. I was on a mission trip last week, and I was just serving the Lord.
Wow.
Not exactly. I took a little time away, which everybody needs to do, and I got to hang out with some really good friends in a beautiful place and play some bad golf you know, with great conversation, great camaraderie, great location and all of that jazz in the warm sunshine.
Nice.
And I've shared with some of you guys, never have I appreciated the warmth and the sun like I have since I've moved to Minnesota.
Right. No one loves spring more than a Minnesotan.
So, yeah, I'm feeling refreshed. I feel rested. I'm rip-roaring, ready to go. I loved our services this past weekend. Mm-hmm. And so I'm so happy to welcome Pastor Otis on the episode today and to talk a little bit more, keep the conversation going about what we discussed in our weekend services.
Yeah, Otis, welcome. Great to have you with us this morning.
It's always great to be here and talk more about what we're doing. It's going to be great.
So we looked at a passage from James that I love it. Mm-hmm. And it had a huge influence on my wife and me a number of years ago and led us into the fodcasting, fostering and adopting world, right? And so I'm curious, what is it about this particular passage that got its hooks in you? When did that happen? What was it that really got you going?
Yeah, we were studying James in seminary and came to the end of chapter one and dug into this verse. And when our professor was like, this is not what you think. Like, you guys need to go and figure out what this is, but you guys go figure it out. And as I dug into the text and read the Greek and went through it, I started to realize this was the way that I wanted to frame my life. It is about, if I want to do this for real, if I want to demonstrate the gospel for real, then my life has to be focused on caring for the most vulnerable in our society and culture.
Just to kind of catch everybody up to speed who maybe they haven't memorized James yet. James 1:27 says, pure and undefiled religion in the sight of God our Father is to care for widows and orphans in their distress and to keep oneself unstained by the world. So that's the verse that we're talking about.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah, I absolutely love this verse. It's written, it's up in my house, in various rooms in the house. It keeps me focused on the job that I'm here to do, right? It is how we talk about living our lives in our house.
So it's not just these two particular demographics, these two people, widows and orphans. It's really intended to be a statement that pushes us to have a heart for and an awareness for and a love in action, compassion in action response to all folks who are vulnerable.
Yeah.
I think that's a helpful, just even a good hermeneutical point, a way of approaching how we need to study the Bible, to recognize that we have to take the underlying meaning of the verse rather than just the nuts and bolts of the words, because it would be easy for some people to let themselves off the hook today to say, you know, widows and orphans are being well cared for in various ways, and maybe that's not as relevant today as it might have been when James was writing. But I thought you made a great point that it's not the category of widows and orphans necessarily specifically, but the underlying point of we need to be watching out for, looking out for the vulnerable among us.
Yeah, I think that's such a big deal, because this verse, as I said on the weekend, is that this verse is the champion verse for people who are doing foster care and adoptive work. This is the command for all people to do this. And James wants us to do that. But as we said, it's so much deeper than that. It's about us stepping into the lives of people that Jesus would have stepped into.
So this could also be a champion verse for somebody who volunteers at a local elementary school. This could be the champion verse for someone who is serving in a little league or something like Upward Soccer. This could be the champion verse for someone who's volunteering down at the Landing or some other ministry that seeks to serve the homeless population. I mean, the list could go on and on. It's not restrictive. It really is expansive.
Yes.
And we're doing ourselves and others a disservice if we have a hyper, literal restricted view. Mm-hmm. It's not just enough to know the words. It's also important to know the mindset of the author. Mm-hmm. We read in English, they wrote in Greek, but they were thinking in Hebrew and they were thinking about mm-hmm. the Old Testament, and that influenced everything that they were writing. And so it was so great how you drew that out in the sermon.
Well, I'd like to add too that it wasn't until I kind of heard the way that you were approaching this verse that it really occurred to me that while we might take it for granted that caring for vulnerable people is something that people who follow Jesus should do, that wasn't necessarily the case mm-hmm. in the early church. This was kind of a new approach to the way that they would regard people in their society.
Yeah, we have to remember that these were Jewish Christians. They lived in that structure where caring for the vulnerable was very structured, and it was very rigid, and it was, this is how you do this. You leave the leftover from your harvest. You give tithe on whatever day it was you're supposed to give it, and that was it. That's how he cared for them. Mm-hmm. It wasn't about relationship and helping them to be whole. Mm-hmm. And Jesus changed all of that for them, but they were just learning that.
Mm-hmm. If you are not aware of the Old Testament, like maybe you've read it, but you haven't like really dug in to it, you might not be aware of all the marvelous protections that were in place mm-hmm. for the vulnerable. Like you referenced, if you owned land and you had a crop, you were not allowed to harvest all of it. You had to leave unharvested crop, you know, wheat, whatever it is. I'm obviously not a farmer. I'm searching for the right word, but you had to leave some of the crop unharvested for those who didn't own land, for those who were disadvantaged. They could come in, they could harvest it themselves to provide for their families. And this is fascinating to me. I mean, I think you just see the genius of God. This is dignity honoring type provision. You're not just delivering food to someone, you're creating an opportunity for someone else to work to provide for their family in a way that they could be proud of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think we heard that in you and Heather's story about Rochelle, right? You gave her a home, you mm-hmm. loved her and you accepted her, but you let her thrive, right? You let her walk through it and you didn't take credit for it. You were part of it. You loved her and you gave her what she needed in order mm-hmm. to be who it is that God wanted her to be.
And she did the work, yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So we've already kind of established that this verse can be taken for its underlying meaning of caring for the vulnerable. Mm-hmm. But also you took it to its literal meaning too, of looking mm-hmm. after orphans, or kind of in our contemporary day, children who are needing a home, and focused on foster care specifically. I'm curious, just out of all of the different things that you could have chosen to focus on for this particular Love is the Agenda weekend, why is foster care something that's so dear to your heart?
Yeah, I think I have experience with that in my home life. My older brother is adoptive. He is actually my first cousin, so we know what it's like as a family to foster and care and make someone who is in need of a healthy, happy place to be, become part of our family, to be taken in. In our community, this is a growing problem. Mm-hmm. We looked at the data this weekend. Minnesota is high ranking by percentage for the number of kids who are out of homes. And the numbers are growing in Olmsted County, and the number of homes are decreasing. And so it is an awareness for us to understand that these kids are struggling. And when they don't have a safe place to land, all sorts of bad things happen to them in our city.
So I want to lean into this a little bit. If you just drive around, you're going to recognize a lot of the things that make our community great. And there's wonderful things about this state. And I want to really focus in on our city and our community here in Rochester. We lead the world in amazing, wonderful things. Yeah. We're highly educated. We, as a community, we provide world-class healthcare. There are farms everywhere. I mean, you would think that food is in abundance for everyone. This is really a great place to live. It's a great place to raise a family. It's a great place to thrive. There's so much to celebrate. And yet, if you just focus in, you discover there are all kinds of hurts. Yeah. Talking about foster families this week, our church rallied big time to provide for over 200 families who are facing food insecurity. Mm-hmm. There are big needs. I don't want to come across as like it's like this. it's like there's this thin veneer of goodness, but there's deep, rich goodness here. And there's also real ongoing hurts that require lots of work, lots of effort.
It's the same thing that we talked about when we talked about the verse, right? You can read it, and on that level, there is lots of deep hurt and need for widows and orphans. And James's people may have read it that way, but underneath that, there's so much more that we need to step into, and there's so much hurt going on within this town that we just don't see until you're walking through schools every day, or you're talking to social workers every day. And that's part of the joy and the pain of my job. I get to see what happened this weekend and all the blessings and all the joy, but I also get to connect with the people who are in the mess and get to see the hurt. And there are a lot of families who are struggling with mental health and substance addictions in this town, and kids are entering in the foster care out of that. And it's a way for us as the church to love them and care for them. And
we get to contribute.
That's right.
One of my favorite things from church history is how it seems horrific that it was legal to leave babies out in the woods or in a garbage dump to die of exposure. And it typically happened to baby girls because sons were prized over daughters. And the early Christians in the first few hundred years of Christianity, while being thumped on, being persecuted, being imprisoned, having their property confiscated, rallied, and they were rescuing these baby girls. And not only did they change the lives of all the baby girls who they rescued, it eventually became illegal to do that. And then not only did it eventually become illegal, it eventually became a capital crime. It was punishable by death if you did that. And that had to be unfathomable to the early Christians. Like, there's no way we can ever change this. We can just help one at a time. Until it became unconscionable. And the whole Roman Empire said, enough is enough. We're never doing this again. We have no idea. We have no idea how God's going to use our contribution, our effort. We don't know how he's going to multiply it and amplify it, but what a privilege it is and a joy it is, and an expression of faith. Just say, God, here I am. As much or as little as I have, such as it is, I give it to you, and I trust you to do with it what only you can.
Yeah. Yeah, there are some amazing stories from this weekend. People who are walking a new walk with Jesus that have very little, that are like, I just need to contribute, and all I have is this $20 gift card to Hy-Vee, but I just want to give it to these families because I heard what the scripture is telling me, and I'm walking with Jesus, and I just want to contribute. And we heard those stories over and over again this weekend. It was such a beautiful expression of what I think James is asking us to do.
So we had different opportunities for people to contribute right there in the moment, with like the big boxes for schools program and the mission store that's providing for foster families this particular weekend. Do you want to just talk a little bit more about some of these opportunities and the need behind them and what we're trying to accomplish and help both making people aware of the need as well as contributing to addressing it?
Yeah, so we can start with the big boxes. 233 boxes left in 2 days. That represents just the ask for 6 schools in all of Rochester Public School System. The need is much greater than that. Food scarcity is a very big deal in Rochester. I think the percentage that I saw the other day was like 8.3% of children in all of Rochester live below the poverty line.
Wow.
And that would shock people to understand that in a city, as Rick described, with all of the blessings and all of the global influence. And so we always want to step into that space where we can help provide, so that's not a stressor for families and that's not a first step into what causes them to go into foster care.
This is a city that's, it's pretty easy to live in a stratified kind of way. If your social circle is keeping you in only parts of town and hanging around with certain kinds of people, you might not even be aware at the magnitude of that need. Would you say 8.3% of children are living below the poverty line
in Rochester? The mission store we created in order to answer the immediate needs of our partners and people in town. And this particular store focused on vulnerable children. We had things from international things for our partners in Nueva, which are Nueva Esperanza, which is in Honduras. We provided for those vulnerable children things there, but we focused on our foster and adoptive families here so that we can help people break across that barrier that stops them from saying yes. They provided things like clothing and sheets, gift cards for those things, so that those kids can pick their own things and make the home their own.
Which is a big deal. Can I interject and just say that is a huge deal? I remember when Rochelle first came into our home, we drove, you know, it was like an hour and 15 minutes to the closest IKEA, and we just followed her through IKEA and let her pick, you know, and it was exciting to be able to do that. But she had never had anything like that. It's a big deal. Mm. Oh, my goodness. And I just want to say thank you to folks who contributed to that, who are helping make that a reality. Imagine never being able to pick something for your very own and getting to do it for the first time.
Yeah, I look so forward to our respite night on May 17th. We're building bags for these families that have recently taken in foster children or recently adopted, and it's full of gift cards and things for them to be able to walk into this space prepared for caretakers. We have dinner gift cards and things for them to go out and have a good night. Maybe they just want to go home and rest.
So I want to unpack it just to make sure, because some people may not know what you're talking about. A respite night. This is an evening designed for folks who are caring for foster kids to be able to come and drop those kids off in an incredibly fun environment where they're going to have a blast. They're going to be well loved on and taken care of. Those care providers can go out to dinner. They could go take a nap. They could go do whatever they want to do to enjoy however they need to experience respite and come back and pick up those kids. And we have lots of volunteers from our church who are working to make that happen. And just to everybody knows what it's like to feel like you never get a break. Mm-hmm. And these are a group of people who probably feel like they never get a break and they need a break. And we get to provide that. So not only did we do the big boxes where over 230 families are receiving grocery assistance to combat the food insecurity that they're in, we've got the respite night, we've got the mission store. Mm-hmm. And we also are asking people to join our kids ministry team to serve kids who are coming to our church. I mean, I've joked around before about all the young couples that we have, all the babies that we have, all the babies that are coming, and that this church is fulfilling the be fruitful and multiply command. We have more kids coming than we've been able to keep up with volunteer-wise. And so we're asking people from our church, join kids ministry team to serve kids. As a church, we are putting a big old spotlight just on kids right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We want to love them well.
Yeah. Well, and you made a good point that this is a direct way to care for foster kids, too. We know we've got foster kids in our kids ministry. And, you know, if you're not in a position to welcome kids into your home by volunteering with the kids ministry, you're getting to have an impact on the lives of foster kids, even within our church building.
Yep. We want those kids to know that they're valuable and they're seen and they're wanted and they're loved. And we all have an opportunity to contribute to that. And giving up a weekend service would be an amazing way to love those kids.
Yeah. Attend a service, serve a service.
That's right.
Have a great time. Yep. I'm not preaching in a couple of weeks, and I'm going to see if the kids ministry team will let me serve in a kids ministry class.
Do you have a background check?
I have a background check.
I think that's awesome. So foster care and adoption is actually part of all three of our stories and in our families. And in some way, Rick, in the video that you made, you kind of referenced so many blessings, so many good things, but also some difficulties and some things that maybe you said you kind of wished you'd been aware of. Are there things that you might want to share from your experience as a foster parent that might be helpful to people who might be considering this right now?
One, I didn't understand attachment disorder before I got into the foster care world. And our daughter experienced that. I didn't quite understand that the experience of rejection was so common and so normal and so painful and something that was feared, that it's very normal for foster kids to sabotage the relationship, because if they blew it up through their bad behavior, then they weren't rejected. Mm-hmm. But it was that it is so incredibly scary to drop their guard, to let themselves feel accepted and loved. And because if they do that, and then they're rejected or they're shifted to another home or that person decides they don't want them or whatever, that is an unbearable pain. It's so we were attempting to love her, and I think we were doing a great job. And she was in self-preservation and protection mode, although she was grateful for all that she had. She couldn't let herself show it. And there are all kinds of other things. I'll leave it at this. If you enter the foster care system at the age of two, and you don't have a family who welcomes you in as their own until you're 17, you've got life experiences and hurts that need a lot of care, mm-hmm. need a lot of healing. And so we had that. And so, we dealt with all kinds of stuff. There were times that Heather and I, we were afraid for her life, and we didn't know how it was going to go. There were times, that we were, we felt like we were at the end of ourselves. We just didn't know. We just didn't know what to do. And it was hard. It was gut-wrenching. But it was good. It was good. You know, I remember going to an event for foster parents in Northern California. This is where we were at the time. And the number 80 just stuck in my head because it's like everything was 80%. 80% chance of never graduating high school. Kids who age out of the foster care system, 80% are dead before the age of 25, or they're homeless, or they're in prison. Somewhere around 80% of the girls are pregnant before their 21st birthday. I mean, it's just like all of these devastating statistics. It's because they don't have a support system, mm-hmm. you know, and my kids were young at the time. I think Caroline was 7 and Jack was 3 when is that right? When she came into our home. Now Jack is 17 and Caroline is 20. She's just wrapping up her first semester of nursing school. I think here's Caroline. She's 20 years old. And I think about all the checks I've stroked over the past few years after she's graduated high school, all the phone calls, all the counseling sessions, all the moving in and out of dorms into this place, into that place. I mean, just all the things we've done to have her back and just to be cheerleaders on the sidelines, to be support system, to be the funders, think about all of that. Mm. And she's thriving. And I'm so proud of her. These kids who age out of the foster care system, many of them, they have nothing. Yeah. They're just going out into the world with nothing. And that is devastating.
Yeah.
And so when I was, Heather and I going, looking back on our story, we're not happy about any of the hard things, but we're happy to have walked through the hard things so that we can see her thrive. Now, they're about to buy their second house. They paid off their first home. They've got 2 kids. They're thriving, and we are so incredibly mm-hmm. proud of them. Mm-hmm. We're so incredibly proud. Mm-hmm. I just want to say no one is self-made. The lift yourself up by your bootstraps is a myth. We all need a community of support.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. In your story, you both fostered and adopted an mm-hmm. older child.
Yeah.
You also brought in a baby in your home too.
They tricked us.
Yeah.
We got a call and there was a raid on a drug house. And we just said, we need someone to care for this baby for 24 to 48 hours. Uh-huh. And that extended to about 6 months. And we got to be not just care for this baby, Kylie, but we actually got to become friends with, or that might be too strong of a word, but we got to become allies with her mom and dad. Mm. And that's a rare thing. And all the credit goes to my wife. She worked hard to develop that relationship to the point that when they got Kylie back and they've gone through all the legal and stuff that they've had to go through, and they're on their road trying to thrive. They invited us to her 1-year birthday party.
Oh,
and we just celebrated that this family was reunited, that mom and dad are thriving, and that they would allow us to be there with them. And the mom even let Heather babysit afterwards. It was a cool thing, super cool thing.
Yeah, I think that's an important part of the process when we talk about fostering, right? The ultimate goal is not adoption into someone else's home. Foster care is supposed to be the space where children land and it's safe and they're cared for and they're loved while their family is getting whole again and reunited. Adoption happens if that's not possible.
The immediate win is to make sure that a child is cared for.
Yes.
But what's always best for the child is for the home to be restored.
Yeah.
And if that could be restored, redeemed, reinvigorated, whatever word you want to use, that is always best for everyone involved. And I love that we're the kind of church that are saying, hey, we want to lean into that. We want to pursue that. We want to contribute to that.
Yeah, I think talking to the social workers that were here, the most frequent thing that they talked to people about after service was over was respite care. And we got at least six families who've already signed up and they're moving forward with getting it done. It is such a great first step for us.
And this is kind of a new thing, right? The respite care, maybe. And I don't know if other churches have done it. This is the first time since we've been here that our church is doing it. And so not only do we get to provide this, it's coming up in a couple of weeks, but we're getting to lay a foundation of trust so that it can grow in the future.
Yeah. We stepped into this space. Our church engagement pastor and I, Jody Quinn, we jumped in this space and we were like, yeah, let's just do it. We're going to do it big. We're going to just take all the foster care kids and adoptive kids in the whole city. Let's just do it. And we talked to the social workers. They're like, you might want to start a little bit smaller. And I'm like, why? And they're like, because we want to do it well and we're building trust, right? And that's what we want to do. Because people are like, this is a new thing, Pastor Rick said. It's new. We don't really know you that well. We may have experienced other things you've done in the community. We don't have any idea what you're going to do with these kids who come from fragile situations and may have trust issues or may have other issues. And so we got to start small and we're going to keep doing it. So
I love it.
So we started off our conversation talking about James 1:27, and I'd like to maybe wrap it up by going back there. You brought out in your message a really great insight that the end of the verse is this idea of as we care for the vulnerable, it is what actually helps us to remain undefiled, or some translations say unstained in the world. Can you talk a little bit more about that? How is it that as we live out the gospel and seeking to care for vulnerable people, that it's actually having this wonderful sanctification process on us as we keep ourselves unstained by the world?
Yeah, I love this part of the verse. As I said this weekend, the conjunction caused me all sorts of problems as I was studying. And I'm like, but if I'm doing this, I'm not worried about my status in society. I'm not worried about what I don't have in my house. I'm not trying to figure out how to buy the next section. I'm literally living the way Jesus wants me to, and I'm investing in other people's lives and their growth and their next step with Jesus. And it keeps us out of the mindset of having to be focused on us. It's not about me. It's about others taking their next step. So I love the end of that verse for that purpose. And to read it all the way through as this is the step that we take, and it causes us to be able to do that, is what James intended.
Can you even make it a little bit more personal? Like, what does it mean to you as a pastor? What does it mean to you as you're looking around? And I know you felt proud of our congregation as they were responding to these needs, and not just responding out of a sense of wanting to do something good, but wanting to do something Christ-like.
Yeah, I think as we step into our community all the time as Autumn Ridge and as my job and as my family steps into the spaces, we find ourselves growing as we do those things. We find ourselves feeling closer to God in those spaces. And for me to watch our congregation do what they did this weekend and continue to invest in the way they're invested in things like Ridge Fest and other spaces in our community, it brings us closer. And our reflection is Jesus. And we see it in the way that people respond to us in the community. More and more people come to us with their needs and their hurts and their pains. We're doing more things in schools. We're doing more things in community spaces. It is living it out, and it's making us reflect Jesus more every single day.
Yeah, I found myself really appreciating as I was sitting there listening to you preach, talk about it changes how you pray. Mm-hmm. It really does change how you think. Mm-hmm. It really does. It's not like if you do this, you're a better person.
No.
But as we follow Jesus in this, we become more like Jesus. Yeah. As we're doing it, it's a big thing we've been emphasizing a lot around here. Yeah. We're following him. We're being with him and what he's about. We can't help but become like him.
Yeah.
And to do as he did, is to,
that's right,
to model compassion for broken people, mm-hmm, to have a heart of seeking to care for needs. And sometimes that even just has to start with someone's basic physical needs.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a couple of conversations in the lobby as we closed about, well, that's just works. I'm like, no. We're not doing it to get something. That's not what this is. It's not about getting something. It's about being more like Jesus. As we were talking, like, it just pours out of you when you really lean into this inward change that shows outwardly. It is something so different than trying to justify who I am or to get something from Jesus because I'm doing something.
Mm. They're right that works do not achieve anything for us, yeah, in our relationship with God. And we are right to reject works as a way to gain salvation. That's not how it happens. But I love Dallas Willard. You know, grace is opposed to earning. Mm-hmm. It's not opposed to effort.
Yes.
We are not saved by good works. We are saved for good works. We've been called to a purpose. And our highest calling is to be ambassadors of Jesus, to carry this message of reconciliation. And we carry it in word and in deed. And it always looks like love for our neighbors.
Mm. Yes, it does.
Otis, would you close us out in prayer? I wonder if you'd just pray for anyone who is considering, yeah, getting more involved in the foster care system or considering their next steps and how they want to respond to your message.
Absolutely. Let's pray. God, we thank you for who you are. You took up the cause of the fatherless and the widow and the foreigner and the poor, and you have walked us through what it looks like to do that ourselves. God, and as we as a congregation, as we as a state, as we as a country pray about and move towards, take steps in and wade into the messes with people, and especially these vulnerable children and families, God, give us the wisdom on how to take our next step in that. Give us heart to open up our homes and our families and our time and our resources to these who you call us to. God, I thank you for all the conversations that we had this weekend, all of the first steps and all the second steps and all the people who are ready to say yes to loving the vulnerable children in our city. God, I pray for their hearts and I pray for the children who will come into their homes that you will bless them and give them a place to thrive and to feel safe and to feel all of the ways that you've cared for us as we walk with you to become fully devoted to you and live out the ways that you call us to live. It's in Jesus' name that we pray. Amen.